All right, law students, ever been curious about how prosecutors can nail someone in immigration violations?
Yeah.
Even without a confession, without that smoking gun.
Yeah, or like how just being in the wrong place at the wrong time or seemingly could land you in federal prison, how a seemingly small role in a larger operation could lead to charges. It's wild.
Yeah, like how do they connect the dots? It's all about the inferences, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what we're going to unpack today. We're going deep on United States v. Yuami Yoshida, a Ninth Circuit case. And trust me, this isn't just another boring case brief. This is like a masterclass in circumstantial evidence, especially for immigration law.
For sure. Super relevant.
We're talking about 8 U.S.C. 1324. A.O. on encouraging illegal entry and A. bringing in aliens for financial gain.
Right. Those are the big ones.
Big ones, yeah. So today's mission, we're figuring out how the court used basically a trail of breadcrumbs to uphold Yoshida's conviction and what this all means for how these laws are actually applied.
Sounds good. Ready to dive in.
Yeah, let's do it. So first, who is this Yuami Yoshida and what exactly got her in trouble?
Okay, so Yoshida, she was accused of being part of this human smuggling ring. They were bringing three Chinese nationals into the U.S. illegally, Zuan, Dan Lin, Cheng Huang, and Yurong Lin.
And we're not talking about a casual trip here, right? There was some serious cash involved.
Oh, yeah. Huge money. Each of these individuals, their families paid a whopping $50,000 to the smuggling ring to get them from China to the U.S. Yoshida wasn't getting this money directly, but, you know, that financial backdrop, super important for the court's decision.
50 grand, that screams organized operation, for sure. And this wasn't a direct flight either, was it?
No, it was a whole elaborate journey, China, Thailand, and then finally Japan. And that's where Yoshida enters the picture, at Narita Airport in Japan.
So was she, like, personally escorting them onto the plane to the U.S. like a human travel agent?
Not exactly. So someone else, earlier in the journey, had already given the three aliens fake passports, tickets, boarding passes, the whole shebang, all under fake names. And they were told to follow Yoshida, basically. Her job was to, like, guide them through the airport, make sure they got on that flight to L.A.
Okay, so we've got a well-funded operation, a journey spanning continents, and Yoshida steps in as the guide for the final leg. But no direct evidence of her actually being the mastermind, right?
Right.
So what did the prosecution have? What circumstantial evidence convinced the court that she was knowingly involved?
All right, so this is where it gets interesting. The prosecution, they built their case using a bunch of little details. First, there were witnesses who saw Yoshida guiding these three people through Narita, like leading them through the terminals, kind of shepherding them along.
Making sure they didn't get lost on the way to the gate or something.
Yeah, exactly. Then she also made sure they actually boarded that flight to Los Angeles, the right one. It wasn't just her observing them, you know, it was an active step in getting them where they needed to be.
And they all sat together on the plane, right? That seems like more than a coincidence.
Yeah, Yoshida sat right behind them the whole flight to L.A. So that constant proximity definitely suggests some sort of coordination.
Okay, but I think the biggest red flag here, the thing that really points to her involvement, has got to be those baggage claim tickets.
Oh, absolutely. This was huge. When they landed in L.A., authorities found two baggage claim tickets hidden in Yoshida's underwear. And guess what? Those tickets were issued under the fake names those two Chinese nationals were using.
Wow.
This completely blew apart any claim she could make that she was just an innocent bystander. I mean, why else would she be hiding those tickets? It pretty much screams active involvement.
Hiding tickets in your underwear for other people, that's not something an average traveler does.
Right. And to make it even more suspicious, Yoshida herself didn't have any checked luggage. Kind of strange for someone on an international flight.
Hmm. And wasn't there also something fishy about what she said about her U.S. travel plans?
Oh, yeah. When they questioned her, she said she was going to a hotel in Las Vegas. But guess what? That hotel didn't even exist. So another lie, which just makes her look even more suspicious. It seems like she was trying to cover up her real reason for being in the U.S.
And her past travel also raised some red flags, right?
Yeah, her passport showed a ton of trips to Southeast Asia. Now, this doesn't directly prove she was involved in this specific smuggling ring, but the court saw this as a potential pattern, you know? Like, maybe this wasn't her first rodeo.
Okay, so we've got this whole collection of circumstantial evidence. Now, let's tie it back to the actual law. The first count was knowingly encouraging and inducing illegal entry under that 8 U.S.C. code we mentioned. How did the court use all these details to prove that she knew what was going on?
Well, they had to show that Yoshida knew these people were trying to get into the U.S. illegally and that she helped them do it. And the court said that her actions in the airport, guiding them, making sure they boarded the right flight, that wasn't just a coincidence, you know? It showed she was actively involved in the whole process.
Even though there weren't, like, recordings of her telling them what to do or anything like that?
Right. The court said that they didn't need direct communication to prove she knew what was going on and that she was helping them. Her actions spoke for themselves. And going back to those hidden baggage tickets, the court saw that as pretty much undeniable proof that she was deliberately trying to make sure they got into the U.S. illegally.
So hiding those tickets really changed things. It made her more than just someone who happened to be traveling with them.
Yeah, exactly. The court said that all of this together, her actions plus those hidden tickets, led to what they called inescapable inferences, that she was knowingly involved in helping them enter the country illegally.
Okay, and then there's the second count, bringing aliens into the U.S. for financial gain under that other section of the law.
Yeah.
How did they use mostly the same facts to prove this one?
Well, with financial gain, they didn't have to prove that Yoshida personally got paid. At least there wasn't evidence of that. But the court looked at the big picture, the whole smuggling operation. The fact that each family paid $50,000, that showed this was a money-making scheme, a business. So they figured that Yoshida, by being a part of it, was doing it for some kind of financial gain, even if they couldn't prove exactly how she was getting paid.
So the court was basically like, come on, this whole thing reeks of money, and she's right in the middle of it, so she must be getting something out of it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The big fees showed it was all about profit, and her role in getting those people into the U.S., that was enough to convince them she was in it for the money. Now, the word bringing is a bit tricky. Did Yoshida physically carry them across the border? No. But the court said bringing in this law means more than just physically transporting someone.
So you don't have to be the one driving the getaway car to be guilty of bringing someone into the country illegally.
Exactly. The court said that bringing includes anything you do that helps bring someone into the U.S. illegally. And Yoshida's role, guiding them, making sure they got on that plane, that was a key part of getting them into the U.S. illegally, according to the court.
Even though technically she never crossed the border with them?
Right. It was all about her actions in Japan, in that airport. The court said that by doing what she did, she directly enabled them to get into the U.S. illegally, so that counts as bringing them in, even if she wasn't physically with them when they crossed the border.
This case is really interesting because it shows how powerful circumstantial evidence can be. For those of us who aren't lawyers, can you explain the difference between direct evidence and circumstantial evidence in a case like this?
Sure. Direct evidence is something that proves a fact without needing any interpretation. Like, if someone had seen Yoshida getting paid for her part in this, that would be direct evidence of financial gain. But circumstantial evidence, it's more like a bunch of facts that, when you put them all together, lead you to a conclusion. So in Yoshida's case, no one saw her getting paid directly. But the fact that those families paid so much money and she was actively involved, that was enough for the jury to conclude that she was doing it for financial gain. Same with the knowingly part. No one heard her telling those people to enter the U.S. illegally. But her actions, guiding them, hiding those tickets, all of that pointed to the conclusion that she knew what was going on.
And the court made it very clear that circumstantial evidence, when it's strong enough, is enough to convict someone, right?
Oh, yeah. They were firm on that. The Ninth Circuit basically said that circumstantial evidence is just as good as direct evidence. If it's convincing enough, if it leads a reasonable person to the same conclusion, then it's enough to prove someone's guilty. And they kept emphasizing that Yoshida's actions created this whole chain of what they called inescapable inferences about her involvement.
So for all the law students listening, what are the big takeaways from this case? What should they really remember about U.S. v. Yoshida?
Well, first off, circumstantial evidence is a big deal in immigration cases. You don't always need that smoking gun, that direct proof. A strong case built on indirect evidence can be enough to get a conviction.
And the way the law defines some of these key terms, like bringing, can be pretty broad. You don't have to physically bring someone across the border to be guilty of that.
Right. This case shows that just helping someone in those final stages, making sure they can actually get into the U.S. illegally, that can count as bringing them in. That's a really important point for anyone dealing with immigration law.
And financial gain doesn't have to mean that you see someone handing over cash. The court could look at the whole operation and figure out if someone was probably doing it for the money, even if there's no direct proof of payment.
Exactly. So think about this. What does this tell us about how prosecutors might go after people in similar cases, even without confessions or proof of payment?
It shows that every little detail matters. Travel patterns, what someone does, if they contradict themselves, things like that. It's about creating a whole picture, even if none of the individual pieces are super incriminating on their own.
Yeah, like a puzzle. Each piece of circumstantial evidence adds to the overall image of guilt.
And for defense attorneys, it shows how important it is to really scrutinize every piece of that evidence. Is there another explanation for why the defendant thought they did? Could it have been innocent? Remember what the court said. Yoshida's near presence isn't the only evidence her actions created a series of inescapable inferences. So a good defense attorney would need to challenge those inferences, try to find other explanations for her actions.
For sure. And the court was especially harsh about those hidden baggage tickets, weren't they?
Oh yeah, they said the concealed baggage tickets prove she was no unlucky bystander, but a key player. That really sums up how much weight that one piece of evidence carried.
Yeah, it shifted the whole narrative.
So let's wrap this up. What are the key takeaways from our deep dive into U.S. v. Yoshida, the things everyone should remember about circumstantial evidence and these immigration laws?
Okay, so the main points. Circumstantial evidence is powerful. It can prove knowledge and participation in immigration crimes, even without direct proof. The law's definition of bringing is wider than you might think. It includes facilitating illegal entry, even if you're not physically crossing the border. And the court can infer financial gain from the overall situation, even if there's no direct evidence of payment.
This case is so thought-provoking. It really makes you think about how someone's intentions can be proven without them ever actually saying, I'm doing this illegal thing. It's all about the actions, the little details. Given what the court decided in U.S. v. Yoshida, how do you think future cases about helping people enter the country illegally will be argued? What challenges do you see for prosecutors and defense attorneys in dealing with this kind of circumstantial evidence? Mm-hmm. It leaves you wondering how we draw those legal conclusions from really the actions people take.
It does. It shows that constant tug of war in law, proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but also dealing with these complicated crimes where direct evidence is hard to come by. It's a fundamental question that keeps coming up in immigration law.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's our deep dive on U.S. v. Yoshida. Really makes you think, right?
Definitely does.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. And we'll catch you on the next deep dive.